if we take certain steps and certain policies, things can improve. That this is not intrinsic, that the way life has to be. There's a very basic argument in the report, which is that we are concerned not only about progress, but we should also be concerned about how secure that progress is. And it has two basic propositions. One is that this whole notion of vulnerability is very much a function of capabilities in health and education, personal security, and the context you belong to in a society. The argument being made in the report is that this is very much dependent on policies and social institutions. So if you have good policies, you actually make a big difference.
Can you outline which groups typically are the vulnerable and what are the push-pull factors?
Traditionally, vulnerability is seen as relation to specific risks, disasters, conflict. We've taken a broader perspective, a human development perspective, and try to understand the underlying drivers of vulnerability. If you're better educated, you're healthier, have more resources, you can deal with the shocks better. But if you are a minority, even if you're better educated in a majority-dominated country, you still feel vulnerable. So we've tried to trace these things in a deeper context and try to argue that most people can feel vulnerable at different stages and different contexts. For instance, we've introduced the notion of life capabilities and life vulnerabilities, meaning that at different stages of your life, when you're a child or your youth or adult, you have different challenges. And depending on how society responds to that, how policies take that into account, can make a big difference. For instance, the nurture and nutrition for young children, even up to the age of 3, can actually predict heart disease in adults over 60. So it's hugely important, yet most budgets in the world put very little money in the early period of one's life. They actually grow up. There are a few good examples like Sweden, but the argument is not only we're talking about level of budgets, but also the timing of budgets. And therefore, the report tries to dig into these things in much more detail and try to understand what are the innate drivers of vulnerability.
Can you share some examples of specific countries that have made significant development gains but are beginning to slide backwards?
Well, the report actually takes a macro view first and highlights that progress in human development is beginning to slow down across the board. This is for high human development countries, this is for low human development countries, the middle as well. And for the first time in the 20 plus years we've been tracking countries in terms of how well they're doing in human development, three countries, for instance, in Europe are actually showing a reversal in human development gains. This had never happened before. This is a high human development category. At the same time, you also see that in the middle part particularly, there's been quite a big movement of some countries doing better than others. And that's partly connected to data revision, but a lot is connected to how well these countries have dealt with the Great Recession, the Great Crisis, which has been still engulfing the world.
Given the incidence of risk and vulnerability, which regions are performing best in development?
It's very difficult to say which region is doing better. Rather, there are some countries who have done better, but the emphasis in the report is on what can be done to strengthen the innate abilities of societies and individuals to do better. And it highlights four or five very key policy measures. The first one being very much universal access to basic social services. The argument has always been that you have to be rich before you can afford that. And we actually try to demolish that straw person because historic evidence shows that many countries who took that route did that at per capita income levels which are actually lower than what South Asia has today. We've also gone into reviving the notion of full employment, which was a big objective in the 50s and 60s, and now, and somehow disappeared for many decades, and we want to reinvest and encourage that whole focus on full employment because jobs are far more important than wages are secure from it. High levels of employment are related to low levels of violence, social cohesion, all kind of things make societies more robust. And we also take an argument that there are certain things you can do directly in terms of improving the norms in society of discrimination, of inequality, and improving the legal basis so that citizens, whether they're minorities or majorities, can have equal rights and equal access to social services.